Today's program was brought to you by Roth Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to Fun Man About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Rachel Jacobs.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And Mary is here in spirit.
Yes, she's on a work visit to somewhere in Jersey, somewhere over there. She crossed a river and she's doing work stuff. But I'm sure she's listening, of course, because she misses us dearly, almost as much as we miss her. We are a podcast on all things fermented, weekly journey through all things fermented. We cover all sorts of different topics, and we are archived on
iTunes,
Stitcher,
and heritageradionetwork.org.
.org.
And that's where Mary can listen to us,
that's
and all you guys out there, too.
And if you really like it, it's never too early to get started. We're not going to dwell on it too much because we always have a season for it. But if you really like Heritage Radio Network, please support the station at heritageradionetwork.org and click that donate button because we survive off of you when we're all volunteering our time. But this awesome network of people and shows, including Feast Your Ears by Harry Rosenblum, which is awesome. You hear that?
I've heard a little bit about that show.
So good.
Could it be that we have a sort of a crossover for our season opener?
Maybe. That's our season opener. Welcome to 2017. Happy New Year. We got a couple fun things happening here in New York City and abroad, which we would like to talk about right now. First off, this Thursday, Kelly Taylor and I are doing the Trolley Tour 3.0. We're hitting the Bronx. We get in an old 1950s trolley and we go to different breweries. We're going to hit Chelsea Brewing Company, Gun Hill Brewing Company, Gun Hill Tavern, and Bronx Brewing Company. And we leave at 6 o'clock. You can go to kelsobeer.com to find out more information about that and get tickets. I think there's just a couple left. 30 people. We have a giant bottle share on the trolley. It's pretty.
It's super worth it. just to ride on the trolley.
It's kind of insane. Yeah. It's insane. Oh, and our company, of course, right, Rachel?
Oh yeah.
See,
fabulous people, fabulous beer, fabulous trolley.
That's right. Speaking of fabulous people and fabulous beer, my alma mater, the New York City Home Brewers Guild, is hosting its 11th annual homebrew competition, AHA BJCP sanctioned competition called Homebrew Alley. It's our 11th year in existence. We're going to hold it at Alewife. And I encourage all of you homebrewers to enter the competition. You can go to homebrewalley.com to enter. And if you are a BJCP certified judge or would like to steward and help out, you can also register to do so there at homebrewalley.com. If you just want to support your beer, your homebrew loving friends, and you live in New York City, you can go to, you can come to the awards ceremony, which is going to be at Alewife on February 11th. So the competition is February 10th and 11th. Registration is open now to do that. Later, in late March, the National Homebrew Competition is going to take place, the first rounds, and we're hosting that this year at Kings County Brewers Collective.
What?
So we're drinking that right now. We have Robot Fish 3 in our hands here at Revertis, and we're
still obsessed with them.
Delightfully degusting their delicious libations.
Degustation.
Degust. It means to taste and savor appreciatively.
Anyway, tell us more about that.
More about that. Well, registration goes up for that on January 30th to February 5th. There's only a week worth of time where you can actually register for the National Homebrew Competition, and it is on those dates. You mail after that, and then we will be hosting it at KCBC for the first rounds on March 24th and 25th. And if you go to the AHA website, you can sign up for stewarding and judging there as well. Prior to that, later this month, or late February, we're doing our first ever New York City Fermentation Festival, which we're very excited about. Actually, it's not really the first festival, but it's the first festival of its size and of its nature. For our friend Zachary Shulman puts on Ferment every year, which is more like a fermentation potluck, and that's really awesome. And so I've got him and also our recurring guest, Cheryl Passwater, and the Ferment group, and we're going to benefit Just Food with this, but we've got a great team of people helping organize it. It'll be a one-day afternoon festival from 11 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon. A bunch of homebrew clubs representing Brunity will be there. We'll have Mama O's Kimchi, Barry's Tempeh. We'll have Brooklyn Kitchen. We'll have Beer Box Company. We'll have Bitter and Esters. We'll have all sorts of stuff. Go to nycfermentationfestival.com to find out more information about that. That will go very live tomorrow, or look it up on the Google machine and the Facebook. You'll find information on that.
That's going to be a really cool festival with all sorts of fermentation vendors, classes, just people to meet.
Damn,
it's going to be really cool.
Help desk. It's all ages, so family friendly. We're going to have a kimchi making station and a crowd making station, and hopefully some science corners and some fun crafty kids stuff. So we're very excited about that.
Is it? May I ask a question about it?
Whose voice is that?
Who is that?
Oh, hi, this is Harry.
Oh my Rosenberg. God, your voice sounds so familiar. It's almost like I'm listening to episode 145 from January 4th, 2016. Aceto Back to the Future Vinegar with Harry Rosenblum.
Harry Rosenblum, will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Man, all this applause tonight.
It's
really, the studio is full.
Yeah, it's actually just those two people
That's
at the
rain.
Table in front of the studio. They're really loud.
Yeah.
They've been waiting out here all day.
I'm also the host of Feast Your Ears here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org on Wednesdays. So pleased to be back for my second time on Ferment About It.
We had you were, I think you were our first episode last year.
Oh,
so actually
true.
you are starting this season again with us.
That's great.
In a different capacity.
So I was going to ask if the Fermentation Festival in February is going to be, it's going to be like as if you listened to all of the episodes of Ferment About It.
Pretty
much. Like
all of them
and
the ones
one
we
day.
Haven't covered yet.
That's right. And it will be kind of around the same time as we do our 200th episode. So we hope to do a lot of interviews on the floor and compile that to be our 200th episode and celebrate that.
Are you? Is there a current call for vendors? Like, are you looking?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
There's absolutely. So if you are a vendor and listening to this, you could email me at kuzmi@kuzmi.com or nycfermentationfestival@gmail.com, and I can give you all the information and specs if you would like to participate. We'd love to have you. It's going to be a giant smorgasbord of fun, and we have a lot of space. And the space came about because the New York City Brewers Guild is putting on the 8th annual New York City Beer Week. It starts on Friday, February 24th, and goes till Sunday, March 5th. And our opening bash gala is going to be that evening in the same venue. But we didn't want to do a two-session festival, so we decided we were going to outsource the daytime festival to something else. And I was like, well, I think a fermentation festival would be cool. And here we are. So
And necessary.
And what a great lead-up into the celebration that night.
Absolutely. Right. And, you know, one thing that kind of brought us to starting this show was celebrating the crossovers of all things fermented and our perspective from it, of both Mary and I being brewers first, primarily. We're very excited about that. But Harry, welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
We're really happy to have you.
It's always fun to come into this studio. Even now this week, I'll be here twice this week.
Twice this week.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's Wednesday.
It's warm.
It's warm in here. It's very cold in here. You have been doing your show for a year. When we last had you on the show, we talked all things vinegar.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you are in the process of writing your book and dealing with a lot of different recipes. Give us a couple updates on.
So my book is called Vinegar Revival. That was the name. I don't remember if we had that title. Probably not.
No, you wanted to call it just Vinegar.
Yeah.
And they weren't letting you do that.
Yeah. So the book is titled Vinegar Revival, but I put my foot down when my editor, who maybe she's listening to this, when my editor said that that's the title they wanted. I said that we were then not allowed to have anybody with a mustache or suspenders or like banjos or fiddles or anything on the cover. So luckily, none of those things are on the cover. Chris, you have the copy of the cover right there.
Cover.
So we just decided on the cover.
It's a bunch of people with mustaches and suspenders.
I know.
Oh, wait,
right?
No, that's the back.
Oh,
so it's not on the cover. It's on the back of the book. I got you. Right.
So actually, when you open it, it's like one of those birthday cards that plays a song. You open it, and it plays bluegrass.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So we're looking at this cover. Keep it's a really beautiful photo of a spread of things that look like they're maybe pickled in vinegar.
They are.
There's some chilies. There's some pickles. There's some beets. Some tomatoes.
Did you take these photos?
I did not. The photos were taken by an incredible photographer named Ed Anderson, who flew all the way out to New York from California. I really appreciated that, to take the photos, and did an amazing job. The rest of the photos are just as stunning as the cover. And yeah, the book comes out August 1st, so it will be available everywhere. I just today received back the second round of edits, so I received back a full printout of the entire book. This is sort of my last chance to make any fixes. Got to remember to put Chris's name in the thanks.
Oh, come on. I failed you, though.
I think it's already in there.
I kind of failed you, though. You gave me a recipe to help with the book, and I didn't. I got busy starting a brewery and stuff. And
but see, that's what someone told me. I forget who told me this when I started working on the book. They said, if you're going to send out recipes to be tested by your friends, make sure you send the same recipe to at least three people.
There you go.
Accurate.
So
did you get 2 for 3 on that one, maybe?
I forget which recipe I sent you, but the recipes, I mean, I think they all turned out delicious. They definitely, the recipe testing phase was a lot of work, as anyone who's written a cookbook, I'm sure, would tell you. But there was a lot of tweaking of the recipes, and of course, things that, you know, if you do, and I'm, you know, this is true, I'm sure the same thing is true in brewing, like, if you have the recipe so clear in your head, and it's something you make all the time, a lot of the recipes in the book are things that I make at home a lot. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, I had to sort of translate that to the page. And so remembering that, like, you know, I don't know, just like little shortcuts that you happen to take, that you have to list all that stuff out.
Yeah. What was the feedback from the recipe testers that you did it? Were they very engaged? And
they were. I mean, for the most part, you know, people were very engaged. They gave me really great tips. There certainly were recipes where I had typed it up and forgotten like a key ingredient, you know, like a recipe that like had garlic in the title that I'd forgotten to put garlic in the list of ingredients. Yeah. So, you know, some real big things. And then a lot of other things about just time of cooking. And one of the things too that, you know, you sort of have to think about is that it's really hard to write a recipe and imagine what everyone's cooking conditions are going to be like. Mm-hmm. Some people's ovens run hot. Some people's ovens don't. People have different kinds of pans, different size pans. You know, you have to be specific and vague at the same time. You know, you say a medium saucepan, but like there's not really a definite, it's not like there's a, you know, I don't have a glossary that says medium means 3 quarts or whatever that is. And so a lot of the things in the book, either, you know, I changed around based on people's feedback of saying, well, I didn't have a medium saucepan, I just had a big pot. Mm-hmm. And I did in a big pot, but I doubled the recipe to do for a party. And so I thought, oh, well, that's good. Maybe I'll put that in the book to make it bigger.
You've been running Brooklyn Kitchen, and you've been certainly well in tune with what's going on culinarily in the city and microcosm for the world. And your book is called A Vinegar Revival. So that our palates have certainly changed that way for sour beers and other things.
Right.
This is celebrating this, and our palate's coming back to this, or is it
absolutely
kind of preemptive?
I think that it is. I mean, I, you know, I have to say, I was really, you know, I was hoping when New Year's came around that all the like lists of like the hot foods of 2017 would include things like vinegar. Didn't. There's still time. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, maybe 2018, all the big media outlets will pick up on how great vinegar is. But I think that I think we are having a return to it. And for me, you know, one of the things about that name is that vinegar used to be something I think that was far more prevalent for a lot of reasons. Preservation, not least among them.
Right.
That, you know, making your food acidic before there was refrigeration was real important.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I have been listing sour beer as making a comeback, though. So maybe vinegar is the next step.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of some of the interesting recipes that you have in your book?
Sure.
Kind of tease.
So, you know, pickles are the obvious one. That's what's on the cover. Everybody sort of, when you think of vinegar and how you cook with it, I think pickles are the first thing that probably comes to most people's mind. I would say that I have a recipe in the book for there's a cured fish recipe. There's a roast chicken recipe where you take the whole chicken. It's based off of adobo, Filipino dish, but you, instead of marinating chunks of chicken, you marinate the whole chicken overnight, and then you roast it. So that one, I think, is one people might not think of. Vinegar pie is one of my favorites.
Vinegar pie.
Yeah. So you basically, it's a custard-based pie where vinegar is the flavoring in the custard. Huh. And that is actually an old sort of colonial era recipe when in the middle of winter there was no fruit left. and people wanted to flavor a pie, they would use apple cider vinegar.
That's awesome.
That's really interesting.
Like it. Sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So you guys can actually pre-order the book on Amazon.com, Kindle and hardcover. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. That's Vinegar Revival. But Harry, you are not here alone. Who else do we have in the studio today?
Daily Crafton. How you doing, Daily Crafton?
I'm pretty well. Thanks, Chris.
I'm really excited to finally have you on the show. We've been talking about this for a year. I stopped working at Beer Street about a year ago.
Yeah.
I just got too busy with stuff, but I met you through bartending at Beer Street. You live around the block from there.
And, right.
As an avid beer fan. If you are an avid beer fan in New York City, you should go to Beer Street because it's pretty awesome.
It was like a celebrity sighting for me, too.
What?
I walked in. I was like, it's Chris Kuzme.
Come on, man.
Did you? No, he's not lying.
Blushing.
I remember when Daly said to me, when your name came up, Chris, somehow he's like, oh, man. He said, do you know that guy? And I was like, I just saw him at Beer Street.
It's this radio. It's this face for radio, I tell you.
I did the same thing to an artist I like named Dan Funderburg. And he's not like so popular, but he lives in the neighborhood. And I'd been following his work for a while. And I met him at the park one day. He was there with his kid.
Were you stalking him?
No. We were both there together. And I was like, you're Dan Funderburg. And he was like, you're weird.
Well, I'm honored that you would have that reaction.
Same reaction to Chris Kuzman.
But I have to say, it's a blessing for me to know you because you've inspired me in a number of occasions from your brewing techniques and from our conversations over the bar and from the beers that you have brought me through that and just as far as brewing techniques and just excitement about some of the funkier sides of life that I did not embrace as a youthful home brewer so much. And I love that you are. And, you
it's harder to control, but
let's get all into that after a really quick break because we're gonna dive down that hole and get deep up in it.
Super,
and talk about the things going on. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It. We'll be right back on The Daily Show with Harry Rosen.
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sirchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sirchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sirchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolette and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is our first episode of the 2017 winter series?
Winter spring season. Spring and is, we wish.
Spring sounds
it's
really nice.
It snowed here a couple of days ago in Brooklyn. It's just been really bad.
It's roughly 11 degrees outside, but we're inside some warm, cozy, evergreen shipping containers with Daily Crafton and Harry Rosenblum. We were just getting into all about Daily Crafton. First of all, before we talk about the beer stuff, who are you? What do you do? What is your life outside of beer?
Well, my name is Daily Crafton, but who I am is much, much deeper.
Does it change daily?
It does, actually, as with all of us. That's how it
works. Fantastic.
I am currently self-employed as a graphic designer. My wife, Cindy, and I run a studio called Lockstep Studio. We like to focus on craft breweries to do their packaging and branding and whatnot, because that's a lot of fun.
You realize this all just ties in because I'm trying to plug the New York City Brewers Guild and that's New York City Beer Week again, right?
I've done a little bit of design for the Guild and helping pump up Beer Week.
Thank you.
Not only do I love graphic design, I love to do it for things that I believe in and I think that are worth it, so the Guild is one of those things. So, was doing that, and I have two children named Chloe and Jude. They might be listening, so I was giving them a shout-out.
Hey, Chloe and Jude!
And drink beer when you're older.
Do what?
Drink beer when you're older.
They, yeah, we'll
clean
see.
Kegs until you are.
Right. Oh, Jude had his first kegger last night for his birthday party, but it was cream soda.
Oh, nice.
It was a rager.
It was a rager.
Oh, man. Nothing like a good sugar high on cream soda.
That's right. Let's see. What else? Yeah, designer mostly to, you know, pay the bills.
And that's lockstepstudio.com?
Yes. Lockstep. Like, you know, soldiers marching in lockstep.
Like lockstep.
Right.
And when did you start homebrewing?
I guess it must have been about 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of friends, Michelle and Dana, gave me a kit I'd been talking about beer and drinking beer for a while, and then I started talking about maybe one day I'll make some beer, and then they gave me a kit for Christmas, and I made it, and I fell in love with it, just kept going.
What kind of beer was your first beer that you made?
It was a farmhouse ale, believe it or not. Appropriate.
It was a farmhouse ale. So you started with a farmhouse ale. Did you go to what was your journey from there? Did you stay in farmhouse ales? Did you go do a straight?
I'd
porter, stout, ale, just ale.
Yeah, I've done a few of those things.
Did that bore you?
No, I wouldn't say it bored me. I enjoyed it, and I was doing that for a while, and I didn't. It never occurred to me that there was just yeast around.
Yeah, here we go. This is what I'm talking about.
On plants and like on the fruit and everything outside, and I don't remember even where I came across it. You know, I just read about wild yeast, and it was like around on fruit, and I was like, "It's just there. You mean you can just have it?
It's free.
You don't have to buy it in a vial."
It was like officially, it was the bootleg biology's backyard yeast wrangling kit.
Yeah, Jeff Mello. He's been
on episode 82.
82,
and yeast wrangler.
What he's doing is great, and
so he's another one. I met him at AAJ this year, and I freaked out like he was a celebrity. I was like, "You're Jeff Mello."
Mm-hmm.
He's not a celebrity, but he's
he totally is, dude. He's a really cool guy. He's doing really great things for us in beer, especially those of us that want to taste our place. To borrow Johnny Levi Compton's slogan from Highway Manor, but
he got me. He's spawned all of that inside of me, and so more or less from when I got that bootleg biology kit, it's just been wild yeast, and you know, some of it tastes good, some of it's really weird.
So tell us about the first time you did that and some of the stuff. I mean, you brought in an apple that was going crazy to Beer Street with me once.
Yes, that actually, and this is something I have Heritage Tank for teaching me, that actually it eventually went over into vinegar.
Okay.
Because I had picked the apple up off the ground and made it started with it, and Harry explained to me that probably once it was on the ground, it was already so far fermented that acetobacter had come over and started getting the alcohol. So it's best to try to do fruit that's on trees or still on the plant, because there's yeast on it, but it hasn't fermented and broken down so much so that the acetobacter is present. If you're trying to make beer, if you're trying to make vinegar, go ahead and get it off the ground.
Yep. Whatever you want.
So you also have, you've taken a log. You've
yes.
got a log. Was that a log that came, was that on the branch? You cut that off?
That was on the ground too, but it never presented acetobacter.
Because it never had alcohol in it.
Right.
Because it never had sugar.
Right.
Right. So the problem with the fruit is that the wild yeast will ferment the juice on the fruit as it rots, creating ethanol, which then when the acetobacter land, they're like, hell yeah,
this is awesome.
I love this. Yeah. If the acetobacter land on the log, they're like, you got nothing for me.
Nothing. But I did pick it up out of Cooper Park, and the reason I picked it up as firewood when I was picking it up. I was going to burn it in a fire. And then it looked really beautiful, so I decided to keep it, and I thought maybe I'd lacquer it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the further I got into spontaneous and wild fermentation, you read about back in olden times, the families had their magic paddle that they would stir their wort with, and they thought it was magical, but really it was just yeast living in the paddle, and I was like, maybe there's yeast living in my log. I was like, well, I'll ruin one batch to find out. So I brewed up a 5-gallon batch and just put the log in it, and it fermented up as textbook as you please. At least, you know, it tastes wild and funky like you could expect wild yeast to do, but like the Krausen is textbook, and you just like smell the CO2 ripping off of there. And so now, like, the more I've done it, the more I guess probably the Saccharomyces and the Brettanomyces to a lesser degree has been cultured.
So when you say the more you've done it, have you been taking the racking the beer off and using that initial starter, or are you using the stick, the log again and again and again?
Both. Yeah, I've used.
And do you leave the log in while it's fermenting?
Yeah, until the Krausen falls, and then I put it to secondary. Because I figured by that time enough yeast has swam out into the into the wort to not need the log anymore.
And then let's go back also to, so you say when it tastes funky as you'd expect, but there are a lot of variants of funky. Like when you go to Acetobacter, that's a certain funk that kind of works in certain areas, but not all.
If I just do, I can do it for like 3 or 4 weeks, and it will be estery and phenolic. And then if I let it go for, like, I did one that, and I have one here you can sample in a minute. I let it go for several months. Plus, there was honey in it. Okay. So there was a little Brett food in there. Mm-hmm. And it got, you know, like, Brett weird. And there was a really thick pellicle on it. Like, I could see the sac arch up and then kind of fall off. And then I saw the Brett arch up. And that batch actually had a lot of butyric acid in it at first.
But you let it ride. I was about to ask about that curve, maybe for that. So,
yeah, you let that, and I learned all that from. I give another shout out to Justin Wilson,
who
I get a lot of pro tips from doing wild and funky stuff.
Justin is great. We've been planning on having him on the show for a while, but yeah. we now that he has a new job, maybe you'll be able to.
Yeah,
do it, but
he can talk a lot more
Justin
science than I can too.
Pretty great. Yep. So you and Harry, how do you guys know each other?
I think initially we know each other because Daly came in and bought homebrew stuff from the Brooklyn Kitchen, and then our kids...
100 Frost Street?
100 Frost Street, Williamsburg, Brooklyn. If you drive on the BQE, we have a giant sign that says Eat Real Food, so many people have probably seen that but don't know that we're underneath that sign. Mm-hmm. Like so many things on the highway, right? I mean, I feel like you drive on the BQE and you see signs and you have no idea, like... You just know the sign. You don't know what's actually there.
We met at the Kite Festival, PS-132's Kite Festival.
So he remembers the first time we met. I don't remember.
Well, you're a celebrity. You know,
he was. And he introduced himself, and he was like, oh, I work at the Brooklyn Kitchen. He wasn't like, the Brooklyn Kitchen is my store. So I went in, and I was buying homebrew, and I saw Harry in there. I was like, oh, wait, what's up, man? He was like, yeah, can I help you out? And so he helped me get some stuff, and then eventually I learned that this is Harry's store and Taylor.
And our kids are good friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jude and Moxie are like best buddies.
Yeah.
Well, it is a great store, and you learn a lot there. You do a lot of seminars and things. Mary and I both had the pleasure of teaching there. And then to expand on that, for home brewers, you guys are starting a project called Beer Box.
We are.
Yes.
I do have one anecdote I wanted to fit in about Daly from when one of the first things I remember Daly telling me about when we were talking about home brewing is that he made a lager in the dirt.
That's right. I was going to bring that up, too. I forgot about that.
Earth logger.
Please elaborate.
You brought in the
that.
Dirt logger.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
No, Chris, it's earth logger.
Oh, earth logger. Sorry, not dirt logger.
It's not dirt logger.
Logger, yes.
I didn't put any dirt in it. I did put it in the dirt. So,
well, yeah. I would appreciate you to complete the series, please.
Okay.
Give me some Earth, Wind, and Fire, because I want the Earth. I don't know how you can make that fire logger, but I believe it.
Well, it could be like a wind porter, right? You could do it like...
Yep.
Fire. It made smoked, probably.
It's the baddest band on Earth, man. EWF, baby.
Woo! Now you just need some heart
Need some
logger.
Smoke malts.
So, yeah, go back.
It's
yeah,
as simple
tell
as burying the carboy in the ground at the right time of year.
Okay, but what was it? Okay, let's talk about... This is going to launch us off to two different things. What yeast did you use on that? Was that the log yeast?
That was a yeast that I got off of strawberries.
Right. Berry yeast.
So strawberry earth lager.
Yes. Well, it didn't taste anything like strawberries.
No, there's a sake brewed with strawberry yeast, actually, in Japan that is a real weird misnomer when they sell it here, because the first time someone brought it to me and was like, oh, you got to try this, it said strawberry sake, and I was like, ugh, you know, like I don't want to taste that. It, like the bottle is pink.
That sounds delicious.
And I was just like, that sounds terrible. And they're like, no, it's from yeast from strawberry. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
But yes, it was off of strawberries, not strawberry flavored.
To get that off the strawberry, have you been strictly using the Jeff Mello bootleg biology kit from the beginning on that, or you take the concepts of that and kind of adapt them
to culture? Yes.
Okay.
To culture. Like, sometimes I don't culture it. I just go, I make a starter, and if the smart starter smells good and tastes good, I just put it right into the larger batch.
Walk us through those steps.
Okay. So, culturing is when you get some wort, you know, jar full of it or so, or even like a test tube full if you have like a tiny piece of fruit.
A minimum strength?
Yeah, 0.040, mm-hmm. just normal.
Yep.
And don't hop it. I mean, you can, but if you hop it, you're not going to get any like lacto or anything like that probably.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either like take a cotton swab or like a sterile swab. Jeff told me you could use a cotton swab in a pinch. Swab the fruit, put the swab in the wart, or just if the fruit is small enough, you can put the fruit right into the wart, like a blueberry or something.
And this wort is at 68 degrees?
Yeah, room temperature.
Room temp.
Yeah.
But you're definitely not, yeah.
I'm not chilling it.
Yeah.
Nor doing anything to like control that temperature. At that point, I will get into temperature in a minute, though, about the log.
I want to.
And so a few days later, you start to see this, that, and the other bubble up in there. You might get some mold on the surface, but that's okay. Once you see some activity, if you want to culture it, you get a petri dish and put some agar with yeast nutrient in it, and you get a loop and sterilize it like over a flame if you want, and then I just cool it in sanitizer, and then I get that loop. And you dip it into your fermenting starter, and you streak it on the dish.
Yeah.
And there are like ways to visually tell if that colony is more or less probably good. Like if it's white or clear, and if it's perfectly round, if it doesn't have any tendrils or anything like coming off of it, you're probably good to go. All this is in the backyard yeast wrangling kit. If you pick one up at Brooklyn Kitchen, you can do it yourself.
And you can all this information is there or the,
it's on yeah. it's yeah there's like a pamphlet that comes with it, it's all there, and there's also it's all on his web on bootlegbiology.com mm-hmm. yeah. as well. So that's culturing.
And when you culture it and you basically take that loop again with the stuff you like,
yes,
and basically take that to another kind of work
starter, yes,
and you generally multiply it by 10 by 10 by 10 until yep. you have the amount of slurry that you need for whatever you're fermenting
to pitch your batch. Correct.
Yeah.
I've also just gone. I did one with a zucchini blossom and ants, and I chose
it. It was great.
An ant?
Zucchini
ants.
Blossom an and ants. Ants. Was
so
it?
It was in the fall.
Like ant flow or like ant?
Like black ants.
What?
Like black ants from nature, like outside. Okay. I mean, I guess the other ones from nature as well. But yes, black ants. So I went to get the zucchini blossom, and I picked it, and I was going back inside to my starter. And ants started crawling out. But then I remembered, I think it was Jeff Mello and Derek Dallinger had both mentioned that they cultured yeast from bees.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, ants probably too then. So I was like, oh, I'll just leave them in there then. So I plopped the whole thing into the starter. A few days later, it was smelling good. Took a little sip of it. Mm-hmm. Tasted good. I was like, all right, I'll just let that ride for a little while.
Good head retention, a lot of protein.
That's right.
Technically FDA approved.
And it went into the larger batch.
Right on. Yeah.
And that one I didn't culture. That one it seemed like it was going well. And there was no mold or anything. There was no funny business.
You're very fun to digress with a lot of this stuff.
Sorry.
So this earth lager, we made this earth lager from the strawberry yeast, and it's just as simple as putting it in the ground. When you made it and you put it in the ground, you fermented it. Did you do a primary fermentation like on your counter and then throw it into the ground? Did you lager down there, or did you ferment all the way down, or like in the dirt the entire time?
In the dirt the entire time. So I mean, it was like. It was
and what
like,
time of year did you like, start it?
In the fall. It really only works in the fall or the spring. Okay. Summer's too hot and winter's too cold. So it was around 50 degrees. So it wasn't like way cold, but it wasn't like, you know, 65 degrees either.
Right.
So it's not like a lager, but it was a 50 degree fermentation. We'll call it that.
Okay.
The thing that I found so amazing about that story, though, as someone who had been homebrewing for years and had never done any lagering because it was too annoying.
Right.
Right? Like, it's too annoying. You have to find room for a small fridge.
Meanwhile,
and then you have to, like, hot rot it and all this stuff. Exactly. Dirt the whole time. And what it made me realize, I was like, it's just like a root cellar.
Yeah.
And all you did was dig down in the dirt. And it kept a you know, flat temperature. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
that's how it went. I like to try to figure out how little technology I can get away with,
mm-hmm.
and that was one experiment in that vein.
And that's pretty fun because in doing so, I mean, there naturally there's a lot of stuff on the outside of that strawberry. By putting it down there and fermenting it all at 50, you only let certain ones groove.
Yeah, and it the log it kind of does that as well. There, like, so there's a bunch of stuff living on it, I'm sure. I haven't had it analyzed or anything. But, I mean, in the summer, I let it sit outside, like, in the backyard, just...
The log?
The log.
Okay, so you're...
But in the summertime, it started producing really gross beer. I was like, this is disgusting. It was like, ugh, gross.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It got hot, I guess. And, like, you know, that's one of the principles of cool ships and whatnot is you've got to do it when it's cold. You.
That's the next questions. Yep.
I'm trying.
You're great.
I'm trying, Chris. Keep it moving.
Try at home.
So I was like, maybe I apply that principle to the log. And I kept it in my refrigerator during the summer, and it was way better when I kept it in the fridge than when I let it sit outside in the 85 to 90 degree weather. Now that it's cool and cold again, I'll put it outside, and then I bring it inside when I'm starting to brew, just like you would, like, bring any starter out of the fridge to let it come up to temp, you know, over a course of a few hours. So that temperature does play a role. Weirdly, I collect the slurry off of the log each time and give it to someone. This time I still have it in my fridge, but it's still fermenting at like 35 degrees, and the top gets distended, and I have to release the pressure every once in a while. So there's something in there you could probably lager with.
Wow. Yeah, lager.
Did you call it the log lager?
so many
lager
puns.
Log? Yeah, I know.
You should only sell it to bloggers. Well, have a blogger party.
Well, there's another reason we have you both here tonight. So you guys embarked on a project together.
Well, we just started talking about that. We went back to this.
So
we're
back to
beer
Speaking
box.
Wrangling.
What is beer box? What is this thing? You guys are together. And
Daly's pointing at me, so I guess I'll try and explain beer box. So... Beerbox is the product of, there are four of us who are involved. It's myself and Daly and Andrew Nealon and Joey Dennert. Mm-hmm. And Joey and Daly and Andrew all came to me and said, hey, we have this idea for a better beer kit. And we started talking about it. One of the sort of, I guess, hurdles that they had run up against was the availability of ingredients. And so since we had a homebrew section at the Brooklyn Kitchen, it made sense to kind of collaborate on it. And, you know, the idea behind Beer Box is that many of the kits that are available out there don't make great beer. And when you make beer, you should be making great beer. And making great beer at home is not that hard. And it doesn't really require that much technology, and it doesn't require fancy ingredients. And there's a huge, you know, the rabbit hole for brewing is, you know, I mean, it's so deep you can't even see the bottom.
Before you know it, you're brewing with logs.
Exactly. <you know? laughs> So it's, and the idea behind Beer Box is not to provide that, right? We are not providing the rabbit hole for brewing with strawberries, although we could certainly go there eventually. But the idea is to get people interested in brewing and understand how easy it is. Mm-hmm. And so we set out to have a kit that was, that looked good, that the instructions were well documented and weren't written kind of in like what I would describe as kind of homebrewese for better or worse. You know, since like Papazian and Palmer, like there's a kind of nomenclature to homebrewing that unless you're a homebrewer, you don't really know. And so I think that was sort of the point behind Beer Box. And so we've launched with some very simple but delicious 5-gallon kits that are extract-based. And then this year in 2017, we'll be rolling out some 1-gallon kits that are based on an all-grain. So a smaller sort of brew and bag style.
I love it. And so these kits are available at Brooklyn Kitchen, but they're also, or there's a plan in place to have them...
Yes, they're also available at beerbox.co. That is the website if you want to check it out. Initially, we were sort of, and one of the reasons it was called Beer Box is that we were trying to sort of, you know, I'm gonna open it all up here. We were sort of trying to ride on the coattails of all the box phenomenon of people selling the box of this, the box of that, the subscription. And we thought, you know, wouldn't this be great for people we know who were homebrewers who were lapsed? That you could buy them a kit or you could buy them a subscription or they would buy a subscription, and then this seasonal kit would show up on your doorstep every 3 months, once a quarter. And what we found, in fact, is that even though that seemed like a great idea in initial sort of, you know, first couple rounds, that's not how people want to buy things. People now in the age of Amazon Prime, they're like, I want to brew and I want to brew tomorrow. and it's, you know, it's 7:41 and I want my beer box kit tomorrow. And so that's sort of what we're sort of trying to move towards, that sort of a model, so that we will have a menu of beers and you can still be a subscriber and you can say, I want a beer box every week, or I want a beer box every month, or I want a beer box every 6 months. And, you know, we'll send you whatever is our seasonal beer of that time, or you can just order one and have it show up.
I love it.
So what is the process of deciding what recipes you're going to be featuring?
I'm going to kick that one to Daly because I'm more in charge of the logistics side of it, even though I have been a homebrewer for a long time. Daly's more in charge of the...
We're developing in phases. I guess you could call them phases. Phase one is beginner recipes. Ones are a little bit easier to make and a little harder to screw up. For instance, we started with... we have a Saison and Belgian ale. And like a Saison, you can ferment at like a higher temperature and it's not going to jack up your brew. So that's a helpful thing when you're trying to get into it, is giving you a little flexibility on that sort of thing, where, you know, especially for the extract kits with the 5 gallons, we want to... Extract has a reputation, of course, and I don't have to say it, but there's a lot of documentation, and through some research, we figured out some really good ways to use extract and kind of minimize that really carameliness that comes with extract a lot of times. Through reading several articles, we found that if you add a lot of the extract very late in the boil, you put like 25% up front so that you get your Maillard reaction still with the hops. And then you put the rest of it late, and it really, we like in testing our recipes, we found that it actually really minimized
caramelization
a lot. So, you know, we're through experimentation is one way do we make our recipes. You know, I've been brewing all grain, so a lot of the recipes that I have that I like of my own, I'm working on figuring out how to convert to extract for that. And, yeah, and through ease and basically through what we've just brewed and tasted and liked. Harry is working on a cream ale. This is a recipe that he had and brewed before and thought it turned out really well. And so we're testing it as a 1 gallon batch.
He served that at your son's birthday party the other day.
We told him it was cream soda.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, kids.
That's awesome. Different. So if you did want to order it online, you go to Brooklyn Kitchen, are you selling these boxes?
I actually don't know if we have them online at thebrooklynkitchen.com. Okay. I would go to beerbox.co.
Okay.
That's the easiest way to order them. And the 1 gallon kits are still kind of in testing, so those are not quite ready. Mm-hmm. Those will probably be ready in a month and a half.
And it's totally possible with these recipes, or with the, basically you have a kit that gets you, if you're listening to this and you're intrigued by the log and the strawberry idea, you could take one of these beer box kits and culture your own yeast and ferment it with the log or whatever to get there, right?
You very well could
cross over and
use that. And I bet if you emailed and asked for it, we could probably figure out how to ship you some of the log,
some log yeast.
Some of the slurry.
Yeah. Some of the slurry.
I shipped some to Jeff Mello, so we can ship it to you too.
It is in the bank, or the bootleg biology.
It is.
A yeast bank. But Dale, you are a restless man and inspiring, and you know you just want to do more and more stuff. You are contemplating some new things also in state.
Yeah, I like to live in constant panic and hysteria. So I start up as many businesses as possible.
Right. And what's the next one?
I'm working
In hopes, in plan.
In planning, I have a brewery in planning called Conduit Beer Company.
Conduit.
Because it's...
Come on.
For everyone that's not... My eyes are closed because I can't believe myself, but... It's a conduit because I feel like I'm a conduit for the wild yeast.
I love it. Yeah. Wow. Channel.
I know.
Channel it, baby. Yeah.
And I got a couple of very close pals that I'm hoping to work with on that as well. I bought 10 barrels. I was planning the brewery before, and then it was just kind of like, oh, in my mind. And then one day I got an email from the guild. Single Cut was selling 10 Mm-hmm. 10 barrels, and I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to buy it, and that will make me have to do something about it. So I bought them, and then I was like, well, now I have to go pick up 10 barrels from Single Cut, take them to somewhere. So I did. I've got fortunate access to a space in Yonkers, and I took him up there, and I'm not going to have a brew house, at least to start with. It's going to be along the lines of just wild fermentation. My intention, we'll see how it goes, is to buy wort from breweries, and I'm not even that concerned about the recipe, because any brewer around here is making good beer, and I just want to buy wort and put my wild yeast in it, mm-hmm. and let it sit in the barrel for a little while. Yep. And I'm popping the heads on the barrels and using them as upright fermenters.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is what Casey does in Colorado, copying them. I'll just say it. Copying Casey beer.
You're paying tribute.
Paying tribute. Yeah. I think Red Hook Winery does those shenanigans too with their wine. They just mm-hmm. pop the heads on some barrels and do it like that. You know, put a little piece of plastic and the wood back on top of it.
Yep.
It creates a CO2 environment where the oxygen can't get in and Cetobacter can't make it into vinegar. Although we will turn some of them into vinegar.
I hope so.
When Harry gets up there.
Yeah. I love it.
You'll have some good recipes for that soon.
It's more of like a fermentation house mm-hmm. at the moment. And then maybe if that goes well, you know, we'll get a brew house going in there.
It's really fun. I think it's awesome, and I can't wait to taste the developments of this. Our show must come to a close. It's 47 after the hour. Oh. But before we do, I want some final words that are also inspirational words from Harry Rosenblum about what you've learned in the last year being a radio host on Heritage Radio Network and about your show Feast Your Ears.
Well, thanks, Chris. When I started doing Feast Your Ears, it was mostly just because I had threatened Aaron Fairbanks that I was going to do a radio show on the network at some point. But I think the big thing for me is that it has provided stability in my life. Because, you know, every morning when I wake up, I mean, yes, I have to be out the door at the same time to get my kids to school, but knowing that every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, I can come into this studio, and if it's cold outside, usually it'll be warm in here,
yeah.
Not always, but usually. And I know that I'm gonna have an interesting conversation for at least a half an hour about something that I chose, right?
Yep.
Somebody that I chose to be a guest. We're going to talk for half an hour, 40 minutes, and I have done that almost every week since I started. So
that's awesome. 58 episodes.
Episode 58 is this week.
58. Wow. Ooh. There are a lot of weeks in 2016.
Well, I started in 2015.
Okay. Well, there you go. That makes sense. Well, Daily Crafton, Harry Rosenblum, thank you so much. Go to beerbox.co to find out more about Beer Box.
That's B-I-E-R box.
B-I-E-R.
The German way.
The yeah. German way.
The right way.
Go to Brooklyn Kitchen. Get your homebrew supplies. Come to the New York City Fermentation Festival. Buy the book, Vinegar Revival, when it's out. Pre-buy it.
You can pre-order it. It's cheaper now.
But also important to remember, when you do get that book, it's very important to authors that you put a review on Amazon, because mm-hmm. it helps ping them up and put them up, no matter whether you liked it or didn't like it. Share your thoughts there.
You're going to like it.
You're going to like it. You're going to love it.
You're going to like it.
Judging by this picture.
And sorry, one last tiny little thing. One of my favorite things about the upcoming Fermentation Festival is that you are going to have a table of experts for people that need
yes.
help and advice.
DIY help, yeah.
In the book, there I'm going to have a vinegar 800 number.
Awesome. That's amazing.
So you can call the 800 number for vinegar advice. It's not live yet, so I'm not going to give
that's
it out right
amazing.
Now. But once the book comes out, I will have an 800 number that will ring to my cell phone during certain hours, and you can get me on the phone if you have vinegar questions.
That is awesome.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Vinegar
listeners,
hotline. You got to come up with a good name for it.
Thank you for listening to The Daily Show with Harry Rosenblum. Ferment about it.
Ferment about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.